You're listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of August 3rd, 2020. Brought to you by GNAT TV, this podcast brings you these stories. The old grandstand at Manchester's Applejack Field gets an upgrade. And getting the food out in times of need.
The historic grandstand at what is now known as Applejack Field, once known as the site of the Manchester Fairgrounds, is getting an upgrade. A $200,000 renovation project, partially funded by town money and the rest by private philanthropy, is well underway with the work hopefully to be finished by September. We met up with Town Manager John O'Keefe and Manchester Historical Society Curator Sean Harrington to get the inside story on what was and what will be.
So this is the Applejack Grandstand. It was built in 1878, and the original purpose was a horse track, which Sean Harrington will tell you more about. And over a series of years, we've used it for all different kinds of purposes. We had concerts here. There was a baseball game over there, horse racing. I understand there was car racing here. The newest use is mostly football, lacrosse, and soccer, adjacent to Applejack Field. And we've done a lot of work here. Some of it's been structural. You can actually see under here, since it's actually opened up, you can see here there's laminate beams that go all the way through the structure now. And you can feel like we've really beefed it up. You know, it was a little wobbly in some areas. And so we're addressing structural issues. And you can see up here, all the way along the top here, there's an entire new header system up in the front that's made out of laminated walnut. And that'll be treated to fit into the rest of the structure. So the reason that we did this up here is actually, you can see here, there were originally 11 support columns in the front. We've got some old photos from the Manchester Historic Society that suggest that there was originally 11. Now we're down to 6. And actually, when you start to sit up here and you start to pan the field, generally speaking now, there's one beam. So if I'm standing here and there's the goal there or football field, that beam is not in the way. The beam right here is in the way, and then the beam over there is out of the way. So you can see now, before that, you would have at least 3 beams in your view. 1, 2, 3 at least. So we've really opened up the view in here. For spectators, it's one of the big comments that we got from spectators. The other one was that the bleacher system here is not very comfortable. So we'll continue to offer the bleacher seats in the back here, but in the front, you can see here, there's 3 separate levels. And those will have actual stadium-style seating. They're actually made in Maine. I believe it's Brunswick, Maine. And it's the same company that provided the seating for Gillette Stadium, where the Patriots play. So there'll be 136 flip-down seats here in 3 rows. And you can see there's 5 sections, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The far section will have a handicap lift, and we'll have 4 dedicated handicap spaces. In the past, folks that have come here, for example, in wheelchairs, have had a very difficult time seeing the field because they can't get field side because it's grass, and when they sit further back on the paved apron, there's people standing in front of them. So now they'll be able to get up here and actually see over the heads of everyone and actually have a really nice view of the field. So that's something we're really proud of, that we're making this a facility adaptable for people with disabilities much better than before. We're sprucing it up. We're getting ready. Obviously, this fall is going to be slower for us than most falls. A lot of the college teams that play here, for example, have had their seasons canceled. But we're really looking long term, and for example, we'll have a professional soccer team play here next year. So the overall changes here, you know, really make this just a phenomenal facility among small historic stadiums. This will be one of a kind on the East Coast. All the way up and down the East Coast from Maine to Florida will be a really unique facility. About 25% of it is being paid for by the town. The rest is from a grant that we received.
A state grant?
No, actually a not-for-profit grant. The Right Track Foundation gave us a grant to do this work. So that's a really generous piece. Right now, the cost may be a little bit more. We're trying to get everything done right and get this project off the list. But right now we've slated $40,000 of town money from the bond vote to do this work. We're looking at about $200,000 worth of work here.
Long before it became a venue for local sports and the occasional college-level matches, the field was the site for a good deal of local history, as Sean Harrington of the Manchester Historical Society explains.
Well, the grandstand was built because the fair, the Manchester Fair, was really kind of, you know, the hub of the season in September. I mean, the fairs here started in the, you know, the early, mid, late 1800s, and was it really until the 1870s that it kind of came together and became more of a formal process? The actual original, which we can do a little pan shot here, the original entrance to the fairgrounds came right along there by the Rod and Gun Club. So you would come in behind Ye Olde Tavern, which was known as Thayer's Tavern at the time, and that was the entrance to the fairgrounds. And you would come in through where the Palmer House is now and come in through here, and there used to be two large oval tracks here, one interior, one exterior. Horse races were a big deal. They were harness races. I don't know if they ever actually had thoroughbreds, but you know, as popularity of the fair increased, we actually rivaled the Vermont State Fair in Rutland for a number of years. And they built this, they came together at the courthouse and they formalized the Battenkill Valley Industrial Society. And they raised about $900 to build this grandstand originally. And there used to be out here on the infield, there used to be a tower. The starting gate was right about where we are, or I should say the starting and finishing line. And there was a tower here where they could make the calls as the horses went around the track. And then there was a large stage where the Manchester band would set up. And, you know, people would line up and just, you know, watch all the activity. And fair really went along quite well until the Great Depression, when things really started to, for, you know, everybody, you know, started to suffer, attendance suffered. And when the Battenkill Valley, when the Industrial Society kind of closed up, Benjamin Bulkley actually bought the fair, and he'd been attending it since right after the Civil War. And he kept it going until about 35 or 36 when he died. And through a series of transactions, Bartlett Arkell, who had a summer residence on Main Street in the village, he was the founder of the Beechnut Packing Company in Canajoharie, New York. He actually purchased the property and he donated it, presented it to the Manchester Rod and Gun Club. And, you know, without his generosity, you know, who knows what would have happened to, you know, the property as a whole. And then, you know, over the course of years, eventually the Rod and Gun Club sold it to the town. And, you know, by the mid-1970s, they were developing it into a rec center, and they, of course, named it after Dane L. Thompson. Our police chief was killed around Christmas time in the early 70s. You know, so early September at Manchester was a hopping spot just due to the fair. And who knows what the future holds.
The Manchester Rec Park, where Applejack Field and the upgraded grandstand sits, is also seeing a lot of other investment and improvements. In addition to the recently installed skateboard park, a new track and field facility is also rounding into shape. Built in conjunction with Burn Burton Academy, the track is expected to be ready for use in the near future. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Over the summer, schools and other organizations have been pressed into service to help meet the food needs of Northshire families, especially those with school children. The Interfaith Council, which is comprised of 10 religious congregations in Manchester, Dorset, East Arlington, Paulett, and Rupert, also operates a program called Kids Summer Lunch, which they've been running for several years. The organization started the program after seeing that some local families needed help providing their children with nutritious meals during the summer school break. It's become even more vital this summer because of the coronavirus pandemic. On Thursdays, a group of volunteers gathers at the Manchester Fire Department to help sort out the food and get it ready for distribution to the various locations. Karen Allen, the program director of the Interfaith Council's Kids Summer Lunch Program, describes how it works.
So for the probably almost 20 years, this community has supported the Kids Summer Lunch Program. This summer, we have about 190 kids, although it fluctuates every week. I would say we have kids signing up every single week, or families signing up every single week. And what we do is provide a food bag per child that should give them enough essential foods for to make lunches and or breakfast for a week. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We throw a little treat in.
Treats? In addition to the food that we're giving here, which is also five pieces of fresh produce, yogurt, cheese, they get a milk card from Stewart's. So they could go to Stewart's and get a half a gallon of milk when they want to. And this year, they're getting a card for a dozen eggs, which we're really excited about from
Every
Stewart's.
Week. Yep.
Everything is purchased so that we you know, all the money that we raise within this community, 100% of that money purchases the food that we have here for our children. But it is completely independent of the schools. Again, the money is raised independent of that. We don't receive federal or state money. Again, it's all community sponsored. And we have three distribution sites. This one here, which we're really happy about this year. We're at the Manchester Firehouse, which has been the best place for us here. And we have about 114 kids that come through here. Mm-hmm. We have a site at the Danby Masonic Building, which is 43 kids will pick up there, and then at the Meadowee School is 38. Another 38 kids. So I think that given what's going on right now, we may see more families as stores and restaurants and stuff start closing down again. There'll be the need for food assistance.
Meanwhile, up in Danby, which is one of the drop-off locations for the Interfaith Council's Kids Summer Lunch Program, at the Masonic Lodge there, the Smoky House Center and its community farm are also part of the mix. Fresh vegetables grown at their farm off of Danby Mountain Road get loaded up and delivered to the Masonic Lodge. Jamie Lombardo, the education coordinator at Smoky House, who also manages their community farm, walks us through how it goes.
So what we've been doing is our response to COVID-19 this season was to accelerate our production and start production much earlier. And we dipped our toes into growing summer crops. So we've been delivering things like peas and green beans, cucumbers and summer squash to the Masonic Lodge on Thursday mornings. And it's been a lot of fun, and we're getting hundreds of pounds of food into the hands of families that can utilize it and enjoy eating it during the summer months before our fall CSA starts. We doubled our production in potatoes, so we've got hundreds and hundreds of pounds of potatoes that'll be coming out of the field shortly. We put in an extra big row of carrots, this beautiful sunflower seed. Sunflower is covering it up, but we put in an extra big row of carrots this year that are almost ready for harvest too.
The Smoky House Center has increased and accelerated food grown on the community farm to donate to hunger relief agencies and local programs. Some of their food is also going out via the community food cupboard, as well as the Vermont Food Bank and the Rutland-based Pharmacy Healthcare Prescription Program. All of this, of course, is in addition to the other efforts that have been made by area schools over the summer to get meals out to their students who need them. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.